Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Boom, we are back. Welcome everybody to another Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are relaxed and doing very well as always. Thank you to our patrons over at Patreon who support all of our efforts here. If you would like to join the group chat that has become far more docile than during the season, you can go to patreon.com/RomaPress. Early access to episodes, other things as well, extra content. Again, patreon.com/RomaPress, at @isromapress for social media. And if you could just right now like, subscribe below, obviously it helps us tremendously. And very quickly, a thank you to our newest patron over at Patreon, Daniel Di Pietro. Daniel, thank you for your support. We greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. All right. Well, we are, I won't even say in the thick of it, because anytime, Andy, it is the summer and people begin to, because just to be clear, to set the foundation, the complaining already begins now about the transfer market from supporters. It begins in June, even though technically we know the market isn't officially open. Nonetheless, even though people know this, they still want to take aim about operations that have, that haven't happened. Obviously, tremendous amounts of business happened this month. We understand that. However, it doesn't even matter when I say or you say to people in January or now, just relax. Wait until mid-July before you begin to panic. It doesn't matter. We enjoy torturing ourselves at least to a certain extent when it comes to these transfers. But let's start, before we get into all of the madness that is the transfer market right now, Dybala, Chiesa, potentially seeing Romelu Lukaku wearing a Napoli shirt, which as far as images of the mind go, that one might just do me in to see take place. But first, let's start with the new man at the top. And Gisolfi, he is finally here. Obviously, this is something we have known for roughly a month now, the name that he was going to be the one to replace Thiago Pinto. I want to start with something, Andy, because I asked this directly to Roma, and I still have not gotten a very clear answer as to why this is. It is perhaps inconsequential to most. I can understand why something along the lines that I'm about to mention doesn't really interest anybody. But I have to say, I found it peculiar, perhaps. They gave him the role of technical director. It's his official title for Mr. Gisolfi. I found that incredibly interesting. Obviously, we know the title of general manager, which when the Friedkins did that, I'm pinning it on this, what I'm about to say is the reasoning behind that. That is not a term used in this country ever. Nobody knows what general manager is. So I think when Thiago Pinto was announced that November, when he was going to be beginning with Roma in January 2021, and they gave him the title of general manager of football, or was it sporting, of the sporting arena? I forget what it was. I think it was general manager football.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The number of articles in Italian that came out where they have the quotations around general manager were bountiful. And you could see, as per usual, you can tell which outlets have somebody on staff that understand and speak English and those that don't. It's always a dead giveaway, by the way, anytime that happens. I think the Friedkins learned from that perhaps some of the confusion that was brought on by that title. Because again, I mean, you and I, we watch NBA. That is a term that is thrown around. Sure. in NBA. It's a very popular
NBA, NFL, American. It's American.
Yes. That is not, again, that is not a title used in Italian football. So again, I think the reason they gave him technical director was because of that, to merely simplify things. But I asked Roma, is this at all going to be differentiated from the title and the duties that, not the title, but the duties that Thiago Pinto had? Because by the sound of it, it would sound like Thiago Pinto had a wider range of duties, simply in the way they described the title that they gave to him. Again, I'm still waiting on Roma to give to me a firm answer on this. I assume it is going to be no. Is that of interest to you? That's one of those things. Maybe two people will care about.
No, well, I think this question was asked to our good friend Filippo Biafora, and Filippo Biafora could narrow down the answer to only the fact that the term technical director instead of sporting director in this case stems from the fact that Lina Suluku is also heavily involved in sporting decisions.
Yes.
And when Thiago Pinto arrived, he had a much more well-rounded role. I mean, he was taking care of administrative stuff. The previous CEO, Berardi, I mean, besides handling stuff regarding the stadium, I don't remember much from Berardi as
name
a
your
presence.
Favorite five things he did during his tenure. I'll give you 100 euro if you can name five.
I think he just made some speeches regarding the stadium, and then he was fired. So Lina Suluku was brought in after her experience at Olympiacos, Nottingham Forest. And she was brought in for the stadium. She was brought in to secure the sponsorships and partnerships that then happened in the form of Riyadh Season signing a two-year deal with Roma. And they also happened in the appointment of Daniele De Rossi. And most likely in the selection process of Ghisolfi himself. So I think in this case, if there is an answer, it could be that perhaps this is a case of Lina Suluku also as the CEO being heavily involved in discussions with De Rossi, with Ghisolfi, with regards to the sporting area of the club.
Well, as our patrons will know, I put something out some months ago where I photoshopped the face of Lina Suluku onto the body of a certain Michael from The Godfather, because settling all family business by the amount of power she was grabbing up.
Oh, yeah.
Her star has risen.
She just reaped her latest victim in Gombar. After 11 years, he left Roma, resigned, as in he was probably buried with cement on his legs in the Stretto di Messina by Suluku. There's been a lot of stuff happening around Roma with Suluku's entrance. Like, clearly, this is someone who has has a much more prominent role than the traditional CEO. Even our good old friend, our favorite, Guido Fienga, I don't think he had this much power during that weird period of time where he had like agents running Roma's transfer market.
Yes.
Because of the ownership takeover. I don't even think that back then Fienga had this much power as Suluku has right now. And I think the trio in the decision-making is Suluku, Ghisolfi, De Rossi, and then occasionally Ryan Friedkin, who's vice president, who's also, always there at Trigoria looking at the players' train, possibly doing some damage in the old city, in the eternal city. At night, I won't say anything more, but I'm just saying,
oh man,
Ryan Friedkin doing damage on and off the pitch, you know.
Well, yes, I mean, we remember, right, the photos of him having a locking lip, so to speak,
diletta, diletta, diletta. before Karius,
the only
before,
thing that before Karius, yeah, still good for, yeah.
Yeah. Before Karius, there was Ryan Friedkin. Let the record show that there was Ryan Friedkin.
Well, Miss Luku is carrying out a cutting down of her rival executives in a manner that Mauro Baldissoni dreamed in his head for about half a decade during his time at Roma, which I'm convinced is why he had a collection of about 5 to 7 people in the media in his pocket, one of which I was not. In fact, I have a message of him calling to me, calling me to a good friend of ours. I don't even know how to say it diplomatically. We'll just say a jerk. That's probably the kindest term. But yeah, he is not a fan. But neither am I of him. So, you know, so it works out well. You are right about Lino Sulucu. It is interesting, though, that because as we remember, when she was brought on, yeah, they were very, very specific in how they labeled her duties and even her title, where they said she will be handling all of the business. Thiago Pinto, he handles the things on the sporting side. From my perspective, it seems like they sort of got rid of that division in things, which is more in line with how clubs operate now. You don't really have such a separation of church and state, so to speak, like that. I mean, people ask, well, is she one of the questions we got some weeks ago was, well, she's not like Paolo Maldini, you know, when he was at Milan. You know, it's not like she's Maldini and Ghisolfi is going to be Massara. And I said, well, what? Just because what? She's not giving 25 to 30 interviews every week. Maldini spoke a lot, but she is beginning to speak a lot too, as we remember. And I've said
and she's,
it
she's always
before.
At the games.
I don't think if- I'm breaking any.
She's always at the games. Lina Sulucu is even the in the cases. Always, the always, always. She's always there. So she's always traveled with the team. She's always until the very last match of the season. She was there. She was involved in talks for even for Romelu Lukaku. She was there with Pinto in London.
Yes.
So you know this is the kind of. You know, executive that we're talking about. And clearly with Ghisolfi's arrival, it is, I'm pretty sure what I'm getting right now is the Friedkins understood that, as you said, you found this beautiful term, separation of church and state, because it really felt like that at some point in time when Jose Mourinho had his vision. Thiago Pinto had his vision and his duties, which included respecting the financial fair play. So Thiago Pinto was constantly going crazy about exactly fulfilling financial fair play requirements by the end of June. Remember when he was scrambling, selling Volpato to Carnevali and Missori to Carnevali? And then there was the Friedkins. So the Friedkins, Thiago Pinto, and Mourinho all had separate... all lived in separate realities, really. And I think what now the Friedkins understood from these last 3 years is you got to have more synergy. You got to have more collaboration, more in-your-face interaction of confronting each other. Even in recent interviews, Daniele De Rossi has said that he's already held a number of meetings with Ghisolfi, with Sulucu. Whenever he talks about the management, he always mentions Sulucu as a reference point. Always. Mm. So he's never like, oh, I talk to the Friedkins. No, he's always, I talk to Lina, I talk to the Friedkins. I talk to Ghisolfi, I talk to Lina. Always like that. And I think that's what Roma are trying to build this summer, because perhaps UEFA's regulations will be more lenient towards Roma. There is a great need for Roma to be on the same wavelength in order to fulfill the objectives that they want to achieve this summer, but exactly to have everybody on board. You cannot afford to have somebody pouting or someone requesting a player and then somebody else going out of their way right. And securing a completely different profile. You can't have that. So I think with Ghisolfi taking on this role of technical director, that just means that Sulocco will be actively involved in that aspect of club operations as well. And then you have Daniele De Rossi, who is very much also involved in these matters. And our good friend Angelo Mangiante, he has said repeatedly that the Friedkins have reiterated to Daniele De Rossi that he will be involved in all of the decision-making that leads up to the signing or the exit of a player. So what I'm getting at is, we are seeing a new Roma be built, you know, just even by exactly this change of title. You know, you go from general manager, Thiago Pinto, who for a while had to be the man behind Jose Mourinho, to having this trifecta. And that's fascinating. I think as we approach the transfer market, as these rumors pick up steam, you will have to always take into account that there's three people collaborating in that room, if not four, with Ryan Friedkin occasionally coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is the perfect transition then to, let's just say the name, Chiesa. He is the name that is out there. He is the name being most heavily discussed. And when it comes to the transfer market, the thing I always pay attention to most is, as we saw with Jose Mourinho, yeah, we know who his agent is, we know the crop of players. When you have Jose Mourinho at your club, because of who his agent is and the connections he has because of his agent, you are going to have as a result access, or I should say more ease of access, to potentially acquire a certain stable of players, and that is something that, when it comes to Chiesa, we know, well, for those who don't know, his agent, Ramadani, a guy that was very close to Thiago Pinto, very, very, very strong because of the connections that they made in recent years due to the presence of Thiago Pinto. He has a very strong relationship with Roma, and there is no secret. I think Juventus, Andy, would be more than happy to offload him this summer, along with somebody like Sule, who, let's be fair, if you're able to stand out in the team of Eusebio Di Francesco, that in itself is quite often a feat with the way he prefers to play football. But we can save that for another time. But Chiesa is the name that, given his contractual situation as well, he expires 1 year from today, so 2025. So obviously Juve are not going to want to lose him for free. This is something that is very interesting to me for a number of reasons. First, he has a very unique profile in the sense of he can play multiple roles. You can put him in that winger role. At Fiorentina, there were even times he was playing wing back, which, again, leave that to speak for itself. I think he is good in a pairing of two strikers, as we saw this past season under Max. He is, I think, a profile that many people do like. There is the caveat. He is not so far off from coming off a serious knee injury. I would say the level he is at now isn't the same, and there is a major concern as to whether or not he can return to that level. That, all of those are fair questions. I like Chiesa. I would want Chiesa at Roma. I think given his situation, I think you could easily get a good deal for him. I just am hesitant when it comes to anything knee-related, and if there is even the slightest correlation to knees, knee ligaments, and AS Roma, the history of the ligaments of Roma, knee ligaments of Roma speaks for itself. The number of victims are countless. Whether we want to blame that on the universe, the footballing gods, a certain professor who works in the city that coincidentally has access or had access to many of these guys' knees, and for some reason, they always they would always have some sort of relapse. I'm not throwing out any accusations, just coincidence, of course. What do you make of Chiesa just as a fit? Because I think for me, even if you get Chiesa, yeah, you still need a number nine. If you are going to tell to me, and this is how I view the situation, if you are going to tell to me, okay, you bring Chiesa, and then you put him with Tammy Abraham, and then you have Chiesa, Paulo Dybala, Tammy Abraham. When it comes to knees and injuries, that trio is about as lethal as it can get when it comes to potential injuries. Yeah, I mean, two of those three,
for sure,
plus Paulo Dybala. No, no, thank you.
Listen,
it's one of those things. I like him to get a strong nine.
Yeah, listen, but I think it all depends.
But what do you think?
I think it all depends on how Daniele De Rossi wants to play next season, and there is heavy reports of De Rossi wanting to mostly rely on a 4-3-3 system. There are also reports that Daniele De Rossi, if Paulo Dybala ends up staying, because let's remember that we'll get to it later, there is a release clause in Paulo Dybala's contract, which is valid until the end of July. It applies to all clubs outside of Italy. That if Dybala were to stay, De Rossi would also consider relying on him as a false nine. De Rossi wants to primarily play on pace and technicality. You know, he wants his players to not be afraid of the ball and not be afraid of pushing the ball up the pitch and do it quickly. And who better than Federico Chiesa in that aspect? I mean, a man is killer. Although, yes, it's true, this is a different Chiesa, not the one that we remember so fondly from that unbelievable Euro that he had with Italy, when Italy won.
Yes.
This is a Federico Chiesa that has been through a lot, that has had ups and downs under Massimiliano Allegri. He was clearly unhappy under Allegri. And more so, I think it's still a case of a player who needs confidence, like kind of Dybala when he was coming into Roma. It's always interesting. I think, yes, from a standpoint of fitness levels, the trio of potentially Tammy Abraham, if he ends up staying at Roma, Chiesa, Dybala, that's scary, because exactly there is no guarantee as to what exactly can happen in the long term. We've known this for quite a while. Roma's greatest enemy is the lack of depth and the injuries that follow as a result of it. But at the same time, what better way to get back on track than to become a new face of a club like Chiesa would if he were to come to Roma? You know, that it would be that kind of signing. It would be another sign from the Friedkins that, hey, no matter whether we're in the Champions League or not, we still make fans get excited about signings. That happened with Dybala, that happened with Romelu Lukaku, and that could potentially happen if someone of Federico Chiesa's caliber were to come this year, which marks the fifth year in a row that Roma miss out on Champions League football. So, but in terms of how he fits with what Daniele De Rossi professes as his ideal way of playing, Chiesa would be perfect. Chiesa would be perfect. Chiesa, with De Rossi, would be allowed to do basically everything he wants to do, kind of like Paulo Dybala does at the moment. You know, when De Rossi was asked about Dybala, he was like, what do you want me to tell him? He's the kind of player where you give him the ball, you say, do whatever you want. You don't give him instructions. You don't go and teach him the specific movements on the pitch. You just rely on his quality. Chiesa has that. Chiesa is that kind of player who dazzles if he's in form. With Juve, it's been problematic over the last months. It was always a small knock, a small injury could keep him out. It was always something. But I don't trust Massimiliano Allegri. If there is one person in this universe that I don't trust, it's Massimiliano Allegri. And even with Dybala, Dybala, although Dybala was injured in his first year quite a lot, he was not as injured as frequently as he was under Massimiliano Allegri. It just, the man is a menace. And the same thing can be said, I think, about Chiesa. Chiesa is a player who needs confidence. More importantly, he needs to be the face of the club. He was the face of Fiorentina. He was the face of Juventus for a while. Then he got injured and he never managed to get back on track and be the face of the club once again. I think any player, I'm not saying Chiesa specifically, I'm saying any player of Chiesa's caliber. You can also mention Jonathan David, who's another player who's been linked with Roma over the last few weeks. Any player of that caliber who comes to Roma is guaranteed to be the face of the franchise, the brand that the Friedkins are trying to build. Because this is the power that this environment, this club holds. It is, if you've got that kind of quality, people will get excited. And if people get excited, you will become the face of the club.
Absolutely. For me, even though he had statistically, I think it was his second best, between goals and assists, I believe it was his second best season since joining Juve. If you watched him, I mean, the number of times he and Allegri would bicker and the looks he would shoot that guy, he was so immensely pissed off for the entire season. He looks, you want to talk about disjointed. He was so unhappy with the way that Allegri was having it play. It is interesting, though, because you mentioned that Euro. It is crazy to me that obviously you're not going to emulate the way the national team plays, but Allegri never put him in a position like that to play a bit more free. It was just such a weird, I suppose, relationship between he and Allegri. Now, as to how he would fit with Thiago, or how he does fit with Thiago Motta, I just don't think it's a very good fit as far as the technical way that Thiago Motta is going to want them to play. You mentioned Jonathan David. For me, this entire summer, because when you take a breath, sit down, and actually build up the strength to look at the costs of Roma squad, you see the individual at the top of that list, and it's Tammy Abraham, who cost Roma roughly 13.1 million euro per season between amortization and his wages. And he's still, because last summer he was on the books for, I believe, 26.6 or 7 million euro. So now it will be right around just below 20 million euro. Andy, I don't know who you get to pay that. Do you think any? Obviously, it's only going to come from the Premier League or Saudi Arabia. Those are the two options when it comes to recouping any sort of loss, should Roma decide to venture down that path. And I think we both agree. I'm not going to say he's a lost cause, because I look at that first season and clearly he possesses immense talent. Inconsistent, I would say, too. The quality is there. I just think, given the difficulties he encountered year two under Jose Mourinho and with Roma, on top of missing an entire season for all intents and purposes this past year, I don't know how realistically you can go into match day one of the 2024-2025 season having to rely on Tammy Abraham every single week as your first choice number nine. I would say the majority, the significant majority of people agree with this. But I don't see how you are going to recoup your loss. Or I'm not even saying loss. You haven't lost anything. How you are going to recoup that figure of 20. I think it would have to be something loan option bonus sort of operation, because I just don't envision any club from Saudi Arabia or the Premier League coming to you and saying, "Hey, Roma, here's 25 million euros for Tammy Abraham, a guy he had scored once, yeah, one goal
Napoli.
When he came back.
Napoli.
I believe it was one
against Napoli.
One goal, right? I just don't see anybody. I don't see Roma getting too many knocks on their door for this guy. It's not crazy though. I mean, you can't realistically rely on him to be the number one, number nine. Yeah. I mean, unless there are a significant number of people out there that I just do not know about thinking he is, it can be a reclamation project under Daniele De Rossi. I just don't, I think it would be very foolish, to be making that sort of bet, yeah?
I said it in the latest live stream that I held on our YouTube channel, that I honestly, as much as I like the guy, I do think that his time at Roma is over. It was over last year, right before he went on the pitch against Spezia and blew his knee apart. As many times has been reported over the last few months, Tammy Abraham was out of Roma's plans last summer. He was supposed to be the one to go instead of Roger Ibanez. He was supposed to go. There was a deal in place with Aston Villa that for almost 40 million, so exactly the kind of fee you paid for him in the first place. It would have been great, because it really, I think, it felt like something was missing, like some of the magic had been lost along the way. And it was unfortunate for him and for Roma to see him go down like that. Now, I just feel like this is a player who, at Roma, in this context, has gotten too much in his head. You know, this is a player who is clearly restless. Whenever he's been in front of goal, he's not shown the kind of poise and stability that you expect from someone in that position. How many chances he's missed since he's been back from injury. I feel like this is a guy who gave you a lot, but he gave you as much as he could, no more. And I would see if I were, I think a lot about Roma's summer depends on whether Tammy Abraham is sold. I think that sale, that potential sale, determines a lot of what Roma's own investments will look like for the transfer window. Because I think without Tammy Abraham leaving the club will have to scrap some of the plans they had in order to refresh the attack. I do not think Tammy Abraham is compatible with what Daniele De Rossi wants to do with this team. I do not think he possesses that quality that is needed right now up front. Because if you want players who are fast on the wings and players who know how to cross the ball, you need to have a lethal striker. Tammy Abraham hasn't been a lethal striker since his first season at Roma. And even then, when he was prolific, he was missing sitters left and right.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, in year two, do we remember? Man, did he struggle alongside Paulo Dybala. It was very difficult for him to find space, knowing how to operate. I mean, the guy looked a shell of himself from the first season. Obviously, when you bring in Paulo Dybala, he's going to be the focal point of the attack. He's going to be the one that you want to give the ball to as much as possible. And he looked like a lost sheep out there. He did not look comfortable at any points alongside Paulo Dybala. I mean, I even think, Andy, of that dreaded final against Sevilla. And there was never any cohesion between he and Paulo Dybala. So I couldn't agree with you more that I just don't understand how you can feel comfortable going into the season, him as your primary number nine. Well, that's a perfect transition to end this then, discussing Paulo Dybala. It's always, we kind of knew the moment he was signed that it was going to be this annual wait and see sort of situation with him, because it is Roma. I don't think anybody is going to deny that the guy possesses a quality and a level above that of Roma. I say on top of it too, somebody of his quality, 4 years in a row, no Champions League. That to me, when careers are this short, I will never, never, when you have a player of his caliber, I will never fault him should he choose to go. Roma would only have themselves to blame. You can't go after you acquire him, you cannot go this long without making Champions League. So if he were to go, and he cites that as a primary reason, you are the only one to blame. You can't blame him. You are the only one at fault. Given that, I do think he is going to stay because he's kind of like when he was in that situation with Juve. I do not see, besides Saudi Arabia, and we know that he has the release clause. That's fine. It's the wages. It's the wages. It's the wages. I do not see who matches what he earns with Roma around Europe. I just do not see it. I think, too, it could work into the favor of Roma. We saw he was excluded from the squad of Argentina for the Copa America. Could that factor into him wanting to remain at least one more season in the hopes of getting some sort of reclamation season, some redemption season, something along the lines of that, where you have an extremely motivated Paulo Dybala, which would be an extra, you know, like an extra card in the hand of Roma. If you could get a Paulo Dybala who is somehow able to reach a new level, play more motivated, and is able to ideally suffer less injuries next season, I think that would only benefit Roma. I do think he is going to stay. I would not fault him, though, for going. And I said this to our patrons. You can't expect a guy of that level to remain. He is a Champions League-worthy player. Roma are not in the Champions League. The right. Maths are simple, given that. It's just, if he leaves, Roma have themselves to blame.
Well, you know, this back and forth, this waiting around, this annual contest in patience of trying to figure out whether someone will trigger that release clause is something, as you said, Roma signed up for when they got him, because a player of this quality, of this magnitude, just is someone who Roma are in no position to dictate terms. He is the one dictating terms. He's the kind of player that dictates terms. Kind of like when Cristiano Ronaldo went to Juve, you know, the man was basically running the club at that point. You know, it's sort of LeBron James, anywhere he goes, he's the man, right? And he is the one who dictates the terms. With Dybala, Roma, it's the same thing. I agree. In my mind, he doesn't move. If he were to move, it would be for a paycheck. I do not see any team.
Yes.
Like the, you know, the reports mentioned Chelsea and Atletico Madrid. I do not see Dybala anymore at that stage and a team willing to give him that role. Can you see Paulo Dybala working under Diego Simeone? You know, a coach that is known for running players into the ground. Like Paulo Dybala would die within 2 weeks of being coached by Simeone. I think that this is for him is the perfect setup, because really he's got it all here. He's got the, except for Champions League football, which is arguably one of the most important things in the equation. Sure, he's got it all. Next season he's gonna make $8 million a year. He is the one dictating terms. He's got an option in his contract, whereas if he reaches 50% in all of appearances in all 3 years of his contract, then it gets renewed for an additional season. So he is sitting in a comfortable place, in a city that loves him, in a team that makes him the star of the show. in a stadium that whenever he plays, it's just about him. He's the movie. He's the star. He's Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. That's what Paulo Dybala is not going to get anywhere else. That's a guarantee. Right now, he wouldn't get this kind of treatment anywhere else, perhaps except for Turkey, where Jose Mourinho was greeted with a stadium full of people. And that would perhaps happen to Paulo Dybala as well if he were to go. But I do not believe that he moves from Italy for that at this point in his career. He's getting married, man. He's getting married in a few weeks. He's happy. He's been excluded, sure, from the Copa America. That's a big blow for him. But other than that, he's the star of his own show. What else can you want if you're a player as injury prone as he is, and as lacking in confidence right. as he was when he first joined Roma? Roma gave him back everything that Juve took away from him in the final months of his time there.
You couldn't have worded it any better. I completely agree. That was much like when Jose Mourinho first arrived. I think the marriage between he and Roma was perfect, particularly at the time it happened. And I still see them continuing together. I just, again, unfortunately, the wages part is such a significant part of the puzzle that just the fact that we can't easily think of 3 to 4 different clubs that would be more than willing to pay that, I just think that speaks for itself. Stay here, give it another season, and we do the. Listen, for a guy of his quality, I am more than willing to do this at the end of every season. It's fair. As you said, he is the one who is going to call the shots. And when Roma don't make Champions League, you have very little leg to stand on. You're not going to tell the guy, well, no, we need an answer now. We need a reply. Listen, you don't qualify for the top competition. This is what you get. You're going to have your top players considering things. Roma only have themselves to blame. But nonetheless, I still think Roma and Paulo Dybala will continue together. Okay, we will leave it there. We will be back again, I don't know, in a few days or 1 week, something
soon.
Like that.
Soon.
We will go back to 2 episodes per week soon, yes. We just, this past season, the extended death march that we had this past season took a toll. So we just need another week or two at the maximum before we return to 2 episodes per week. But nonetheless, we will continue to have at least 1 episode per week. So until next time, ciao.